From your perspective as a counsellor dealing with various clients, adult clients, you were saying that the negative self-talk is a big deal for you, something to deal with.
Yeah. So I guess for a lot of us, you know, there can be a core message that goes in quite young that we don't recognise, and then we start to, as we grow, we start to live our lives out of that core message, and a core message might simply be, I'm not good enough, I don't fit, I don't belong, nobody sees me, nobody likes me, nobody loves me. It could be things like that. They're messages that, you know, when they're said or when we receive a message that's very negative to us, and it may be just a sentence, it's just like getting the right conditions for something to settle in us, and then it becomes a foundation for us. And in the background, even though we're not hearing the message, in the background that message is what we're living our life from. So if we believe that, like my core message was, I'm not good enough, and through my life everything lined up to that, and even when I did my started to do some of my studies and doing my social work and things like that, I definitely sat under that, I'm not good enough. Everyone else around me was so much better than me, I didn't know a thing. So, you know, that was didn't matter if I passed, didn't matter if I got good marks or good affirmations from my tutors in regards to the social work. It didn't settle in me. Basically, the message was just continuously played out of, I'm not good enough. Never quite hit the mark, didn't get the A.
This sounds like, reminds me of my brother who got, like, all through 5th, 6th and 7th form, like, he always just passed, like a mediocre student, just passed. But every year, a lot of the kids who failed would leave and go and do and work.
Yep.
But he'd still just pass.
Yeah.
So he was capable of doing better,
yeah.
But somehow his subconscious was setting him up so he'd just pass.
Yeah, and it's kind of like
the standard was rising, and he just passed.
Yeah, so he could never receive the affirmation that he's doing really, really well, and that he's doing great in life, or that nourishment we get from positivity and knowing that we're doing well, because somebody could have told him he was doing a really good job, and he may have gone, thanks. But he may not have received that, because when we've got an inner critic continuously telling us that we're not doing a good job, or that, they're lying, what they're saying to you is a lie, they don't really mean it, they're just saying that because they have to say something, you know, the inner critic will take away from that great positive affirmation that we're receiving.
He had the added burden of an older brother who was getting good grades.
Yeah, well, you know.
And was part of the outer, I was probably part of the outer critic, because as a kid you pick up the vibes, and because you've got no kind of filter when you're young, you just say the stuff.
Oh, I agree. Like, I can remember my sister was definitely education came easy for her. She was an A student.
To follow that.
I couldn't follow that.
I mean, so how much of that? Because I was quite surprised as an adult to discover what a big deal this was for the kids who were following the oldest kid.
Oh, no, I couldn't follow that.
Trying to keep up. The impossibility of trying to keep up with the older kid, who's older for starters.
Well, it was never going to happen. And so, yeah, I didn't. When I think back on that, I must admit there was a kind of a cloud already over me when I hit high school.
Yeah.
My brother and my sister had gone before me. They did have a name. So I came in knowing that, you know, into the high school they knew my brothers and my brother and sister.
Yeah, my youngest daughter's complained about that.
Yeah, so I had that as well. But yeah, so for me, I just didn't switch on to education at all.
But your message, but what was the message you had internalized?
Oh, well, I'm not good enough.
Just not good enough.
You know, nothing that I did was ever going to be good enough. So I just kind of switched off. But I didn't know that message back then, Aaron. It's not as though it's a message that you hear in your head playing over and over again. It's much deeper. And it's a sense in us that we simply aren't good enough. Or, you know, some people when they've been adopted feel like they don't fit. into the family, and they don't know why, but they just don't fit, you know, or I don't belong. You know, that could be a message sitting in there, and they just don't understand why they don't belong in certain groups or situations. They always feel like they're the outsider.
So how does that work into our life as an adult?
Well, I mean, it can be the hindrance of us actually reaching our potential, because the self-belief and the belief of others doesn't happen, doesn't get ignited. And so we're always kind of, you know, struggling to get somewhere that in our minds there is a somewhere, but actually the somewhere is our living our life all the time, you know, doing every day, but we don't receive the goodness of what we're doing, because we're always striving to be better, or do, you know, what's the next thing? Where can I prove myself again? It can be very, although that's not what you would hear yourself saying, where can I prove myself? It's more so a feeling and a sense of, yeah, you know, I'll do that because I, you know, that'll challenge me, or that'll push me to do something, to get ahead, to prove something.
Mm. Or you might have the voice in your head that's like, it doesn't matter what I do, it's probably going to go, it's probably going to screw up.
Yeah, and that,
it's probably going to go wrong at some point.
And depending on your personality type and how deeply that the inner critic has taken root, is how you're going to live that out. So maybe at some point, if your personality is quite strong and you're an extrovert and you're kind of out there doing life, then you're probably more likely to push through that more. Because your personality is to be out there, where an introvert would probably withdraw and receive those messages much more deeply, and believe them. Yeah, so a lot's got to do with our personality and how strong we are and our self belief in ourself. Because even though the inner critic may have taken ground in you, that doesn't mean you don't have a self-belief as well, so you can still push back. It's just how much tenacity have you got to push back and knowing what you're doing.
And are you aware of it?
Yeah.
And we talk about negative self-talk as well. Just, go, Aaron, you idiot. Like when I make it, just a little mistake.
Yeah.
You know, and since I've heard about negative self-talk, I try not to do that stuff.
That's great.
But
good. Because that's what we need, pushback.
It's so common.
It is, unfortunately.
We all do it. Yeah.
Well, it's much easier to go to the negative than it is the positive, because, I mean, we've talked about this before. We're uncomfortable with affirmations. We're uncomfortable with people seeing or even ourselves seeing how good we are at something. It's almost like we're not allowed to claim that. We're not allowed to go, yeah, I am good at that.
Aaron, you're genius.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome?
I'd be so careful not to say that if someone... Maybe I would say it private. I'd never say it if someone was listening.
Mm.
You'd have to be, you know, it's not in New Zealand culture.
No. It's unfortunately, it can be quite, well, here's a little exercise. You might not enjoy doing it, and I don't encourage everyone to do it. But, I mean, if you're willing to, you know, it's always a good exercise to maybe sit in the quiet at some point and just jot down the words that you might say to yourself, all the negative words that you hear, because you'll know them. This is your language.
Yeah.
You'll know them very well, and they're going to be quite disturbing words. They're not going to be pleasant words. They're not going to be words we probably find in the dictionary so much. Maybe some of them might be in there, but they're going to be pretty bad words.
Yeah.
And so it's quite distressing when you sit down and you write this stuff down, be honest with yourself, and get it on paper and have a look at it, because that toxic language is what it is flowing through you all the time, and if you don't have a look at it and challenge it, it will continue to sit there unknown.
And as you pointed out in the past, we would never talk to another person like that unless we were probably in a rage or something like yeah.
And even if we were in a rage, we wouldn't say some of that language that we would say to ourselves. Honestly, this language is toxic. It's poisonous. You might as well, it's like poison arrows. We're just shooting ourselves with all these poison arrows and expecting us to be joyful after it, you know, to be in some sense where we feel good about ourselves. It's impossible to under something like that. And so when we sit under that kind of pressure, obviously we're looking for some sense of joy in life, and so we may look towards other things to bring that in. Rather than recognizing we have to work on ourselves, it's actually more about me, what's going on in me. And that takes strength, I think, to sit down and want to know yourself and what's going on in your brain and your mind, I should say, and what's travelling around in there, unleashed, train those words, I think, or challenge them and replace them with something that's more the truth.
So have you got those quotes there? Because we want to move to talking about how these messages arrive with kids. When we're kids.
Yeah, now you'd ask me. It's probably halfway down the page.
That's right. You look for it. I'll talk about experiences with going to a parenting with nonviolence course or workshop, and the discussion is about how you treat your kids, but invariably it's also about how you were treated as a kid. You can't talk about one without talking about the other. Mm. So there'll be a lot of the. For parents with young kids, that the exercise there is about unpicking what's happened to them, to help understand how they're going to do things with their own kids, I think. I was actually at one of those courses where I learned that thing about hearing from second and third siblings about what it was like trying to keep up with the oldest child. It was something as an oldest child, it was something I was completely oblivious to. I was really quite stunned. I must have been in my mid-40s when I learned this.
Hmm.
So anyway, I'm just saying all this now to give you time. How are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that well. okay, but it's a really long article, this. I don't know if anyone's seen it, of Mike King's. That was on Facebook. Such a good read.
So he's talking about negative self-talk.
Yeah, and well, he's talking about the tsunami of mental health that is hitting New Zealand. And I totally agree with him. There is a tsunami. People are in their mind, they're unwell. Our thinking has become very negative. There's not a lot of positivity. So if you've already got an inner critic working away in there, this is his field ground or her field ground.
Yeah.
So the negative stuff we're receiving in the here and now is going to align with what we underlyingly already believe, which, yeah, is a tsunami of, I would say, mind health problems, definitely within New Zealand. So you can look through that.
What's it called?
No. You're not going to make me go up to the top, and then I'll lose everything that I'm looking at.
You need a
laptop,
Marie.
I know.
She's scrolling through this massive article on her phone. Big text as well. Yeah, let's just.
Okay, he was just talking about the tsunami that's going to hit with our youth, and that a lot of our youth are very much experiencing the inner critic.
Yes.
And I think he was in here, he was recognising that when he was talking, when he went to talk to youth, that he was, I think at the beginning, he was talking at youth. And then he realised that actually he was part of the problem. He needed to talk with these youth and give some of his own experiences of what it was like for him, because Mike King was a bully growing up in his school.
Right. So he's confronted that part
of himself.
Yeah,
well, he had to.
That's impressive, because I don't know if that happens that much.
Well, it was a great story, actually, because... And obviously I'm only going to relay what I remember of his story, but he was picked on at school, I think. He wanted to hang out with the cool kids. It didn't happen. And then he started getting picked on, and then he started telling jokes. I mean, this is his story, not mine, so just be mindful that I'm only picking up what I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was something he was having an altercation with somebody, and he made a funny comment about it, and everyone laughed. And it was at that point he realised he could use what he had within him around comedy to be in the group with these bullies. And so and so he ended up becoming part of the bully group and bullying. And I think he ended up bullying his own friend. And it was at that point he realised that this was so toxic, and he was doing something he didn't want to do, but he was doing it because he wanted to fit in.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be the odd kid out. And then he goes to talk on as he gets older and he becomes who we know him to be, A lot of his comedy acts were quite derogatory.
Yeah,
and they really were. And I think some of us picked up on that, but because they were quite funny, we kind of let that go. But he was very honest about that and how, you know, that part of him was coming through, that cynical, kind of cruel part of him.
Yeah.
through his comedy. And I don't know what brought him in working with the youth, but I think it was around that time when he realised how his own, and this is what he shared with youth, his own experiences trying to fit in difficult situations, and how he used his humour, and how he became a bully, and how he now is, you know, flip side now, he's looking at that and using it to the benefit of our kids, which is being honest about his own story, his own vulnerabilities, and what he needed as a kid, which was to be seen and noticed, and probably some other things in there that I haven't even said, you know. And I probably haven't done his story justice like he could. But certainly he has used his giftings to protect himself when he was younger. And then he used his giftings, actually now he's using everything that he's learnt over his life to do some real good in our young people's lives, and recognising how critical we are, for one, as adults to our children, and how important it is that we are inputting positivity.
I'm just looking at the words you got there on the phone. And it's a quote from him saying that, unfortunately our kids are hearing, no matter what I do, I'm never going to be good enough.
It is unfortunately a strong message. That one there is a very strong message. And if we look around our environment and society, you know, I mean, we've said it many times, it's hard for our youth to find hope out there. You know, there's a lot of shaky ground at the moment, and even us adults aren't we're shaky. we don't know where we are going.
We are at the moment, a lot of us, and that's definitely not good for the kids. They, even if you're not saying things, they'll just pick up the vibe anyway.
Yeah. So he's got a things in here.
Tuned to that.
And he's got, like, unfortunately, our kids are hearing, no matter what I do, I'm never going to be good enough. And so here's something here. It says, Dad, I got 4 tries today. And Dad says, I was there, mate. You should have got 5.
Yeah.
I mean, when you and I read that when we were in here before we went on air, both of us, you know, our bodies slumped, and we were like, we know exactly what that means.
Yeah. And there's something in our culture, and we've talked about the difference between New Zealand and American culture, and it's particularly New Zealand, but I'm sure other countries have it as well, around that, that we're good at giving criticism, we're not good at giving compliments and boosting our kids. And this is something like I've had to confront myself, just because I've been coaching soccer for 10 years, and especially with a lot of the girls I've been coaching, confidence was the biggest issue. And I would say that to the parents sometimes. I say, that's the biggest thing that I'm trying to deal with here is confidence. So just encouraging people not to, because especially as a guy, the urge after the game is to analyze it and talk to the kids about what they got wrong and what they could do better next time. That's just kind of what, I don't know if it's like this for the mums or most of the mums or some of the mums, but for a lot of the dads, that's what your instinct is. You're like, you're concerned about that. You want to talk with them about how to do it. And that all it does is undermine their confidence. And if they don't believe, like, self-belief is so important in sport.
Yeah.
Like it's crucial, because if you don't believe you can improve, you never will. And I remember this boy in like the third year I was coaching, and he clearly believed he could never do anything good, but I knew he had some ability. And he'd be trying to get him to juggle the ball, and he'd throw the ball at his foot in such a way that there's no way an experienced soccer player could have juggled the ball the way he threw it at his foot. Like, he was kind of subconsciously completely undermining. And I said, okay, I want you to just do it like this and gently make it easy. And immediately caught the ball with his foot, and he was only 9, you know. And I said, look, there you go, you can do it. Unfortunately, I'd proved it to myself, but I hadn't proved it to him. He probably needed to do that over and over again.
Like we say, with every positive, you know, with every negative, sorry, you need 5 positives. And I could have that wrong. It's probably 10 positives now. it's gone up, inflation.
You've got to compensate, right? And so, so I didn't really succeed there at all. But just that thing of that, yeah, I think it shows up in sport in some ways better because everyone's acting in the moment, whether you've got the self-belief or not.
Yeah, and I guess we've really got to realise that when we sit under that kind of negativity, then that's how the body is, you know, we're sitting in adrenaline, you know, and cortisol, and there's stress hormones being released. These aren't good Dr. Feel-good chemicals that we should be receiving, which are, you know, affirmations, we feel good, we feel rewarded, we feel loved, we feel noticed, seen, valued. Then we get, you know, dopamine and oxytocin and all those great chemicals that make us feel amazing.
So what are the chemicals you get when, because this is what I've seen, a coach just standing telling the team how awful they were, 11-year-old kids.
Well.
Just, you played awful, you're terrible. I'm not giving anyone player of the day today.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah.
Yo, you know, as a parent, I probably couldn't stand there and listen to that. I'd have to say something and pull them aside because, you know, that's what we've got to do with each other these days. Because some people don't actually see their inner critic. They don't see how critical they are, how negative they are. And that is...
See, something that... And people who've listened to the show a lot be sick of me talking about this, but the New Zealand football 10 years ago made a change to try and stop that from happening.
Mm.
And succeeded. And soccer in the junior, like the primary school age, they just grew by 38%. And all the other sports were like, uh-oh, we've got to do something. And started changing their systems to match.
Yeah.
And soccer's really exploded here because we also got the girls really involved.
Well, I mean, we can see it in sports at the moment. There is a lot of little stories coming out where there's been, you know, coaching that hasn't been
coaching equals bullying has been the way, and you see it coming out. Gymnastics and cycling are two of the ones I'm thinking of.
Yes,
but in every sport, it's been the way.
It's every sport,
and I think as adults we lack the skills.
It's everywhere
to know what to do in that situation. The only way we know how to motivate people is to shout at them.
Yeah, but that's because that's right. That's all we know, and so it absolutely has to change. And look, I'm going to read this piece here from Mike King's thing. It says, most men of my age have a love language of money. We're not good at showing our emotions, and why is that? Because our dads didn't show us any emotion. My dad didn't tell me he loved me until I was 45 years old. Why? Because his dad never told him he loved him. He didn't know how. I'm lucky I've got three generations, and he's talking about his kids and how he fathers. But this is it. You know, if we really want to develop as human beings, we're going to have to challenge our own development and how we developed in those earlier years and what we received and how we are now outlaying that onto our children. So,
that inner critic, like, thinking as a coach or just as a parent that my job is to point out when they've done something wrong and what they should do better.
Mm.
Like, that's really hard to fight that. Like, that's what I've always struggled with.
Mm. Like, it's our language, Aaron. You know, there's nothing wrong with, being able to demonstrate how to, you know, do a shot better or to get more out of something or, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of that, but it's more, I guess, our first port of call of how we do that. You know, our tone of voice, are we engaged with the kid, are we coming in over the top and being domineering, you know, and dominating the situation. Like, you need to do this and you need to do that and you go stand over there and you know.
Yeah, and do you know what triggered all this? Because the discussion happening in coaching was that they were looking at, like, the sports stars, the superstars of sport in football, soccer. And some of them were the kids that grew up in the academies in Europe, and some of them were kids who grew up on the streets in Brazil and were not coached by anyone.
Yeah.
And they were just as good, if not better, than the ones who went through these big, expensive, complex systems. And they're like, we can't be doing...
So let's just pause on that.
The sports star had to face itself. Like, we're obviously not doing a good job with our coaching. If kids could, with no coaching, can come up and be just as good or better.
Yeah. So let's just pause with that, because that picture gives us a really healthy view in some ways, if we want to look at it, because we've got a whole bunch of kids coming up under a system that is, it's conditioned by getting it right and putting in the hard yards. It's just kind of hard. It's a harsh edge to that. Whereas these kids are doing it because they absolutely love it, they thrive off it, they're probably encouraging each other, what an awesome shot, you know, like they'll be like, show me that trick. Like they have nobody coming in over top telling them not to do it like that or, you know, this is the way. They're practicing and they're finding it out for themselves and they're having a whole lot of fun while they're doing it. So they are rising to the top because they feel good about what they're doing. It's exciting and there's a drive there that's quite different from the drive that may come from feeling like, you know, there's a pressure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not up to this standard. I'm not up to her standard or his standard. You know, I've got to get better at this. And yeah, it's not coming from a place of passion.
Yeah. And I think sometimes the best thing we can do as adults is just get out of the way and let them enjoy themselves.
Mm.
It was very hard to come up with something as I was coaching or parenting where, because the instinct is always to analyze and critique for me, and I think a lot of guys, and probably a lot of women, it was just better to say nothing than to do what my my habit, was telling me.
Yeah, and I was trying to think of that word. What do you call it? Critiquing, critical
analysis.
You know, I'm just giving you critical feedback. Was it
positive criticism?
Yeah, that's sort of like
It's still criticism.
Yeah, it's got that word in there, but it's positive. It doesn't kind of make sense to me. But even I've used that language, and I've had to stop myself and think, man, that's so not true what I'm saying. You know, I want to give you feedback, but I don't want it to be critical. You know, I don't want you to feel like I'm criticizing. I want you to hopefully receive something where what I'm saying is bringing more revelation to something, giving you more insight.
The way they tell people to coach now is to ask questions of the child, the student, whatever, to get them thinking.
Yeah, well, engage their brain. Yeah, yeah. So because, you know, you can give somebody an instruction. Or tell somebody something, but unless they actually feed it back to you, it doesn't really go in. Like, you know, we've got to respond to it, because when we respond, our brain, you know, our mind is now engaged. We've verbalised something. So it's why we get our kids to say, you know, when you go, I'll go clean up your room and I'll be in to check in 5 minutes or something, and you get them to respond to you, to say, yes, Mum, or okay, Dad.
Well, yeah, but that becomes a habit too, though.
But the response means now I know that they've engaged, and so there's some responsibility there to them to now follow that up, because I know they've engaged with me and they've heard what I've said. If I don't get an answer from them, how can I know that they've engaged? So if we're giving out instructions and orders and expecting a person to just receive that, they're probably not, unless they've fed that back. They haven't actually received it. That's you.
I've got problems with phones.
You've got too many phones, Aaron.
Well, the old one broke, and so I've got backup phones and spare phones, and people have given me phones.
Oh, do you want to give me a phone? I could do with a good
one. Well, no, you don't want this broken one. This is like a $50 one. Sometimes I get text about what we're talking about, so I'm trying to find it. Constructive criticism.
Thank you so much. Constructive. Yeah, I mean, constructive is great. The criticism isn't. Because, you know, constructive, we can just work with the constructive. Just give feedback. How about we change the word to feedback?
But it's such a challenge. Like, I'll keep using me as the example. It's such a challenge. It's hard to say compliments. It's really hard to say compliments. And I have to kind of force myself to do it, or it's easier just to say nothing. But at least I'm not saying negative things. But I have the voice in my, or the instruction in my brain is that what I say has to be accurate. Like, we're talking about this off the air, and I think I'm presuming I'm not the only guy like this.
Yeah.
Like you can't tell them they're a good player if they're not a good player. But accuracy in that sense is not the point of what's going on. The point is that they need a certain amount of confidence to try new things.
There we go.
And they need self-belief to succeed. And they might already have pretty poor self-belief.
Yeah.
And all I'm doing is adding to that.
Yeah. So,
But it's really, like, I can feel the pushback from somewhere in me every time I go to do a complimentary thing. Like, there's a bit of me that's trying to stop me. Like, it's a thing I shouldn't be doing.
There you go. There's your work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that stopping.
Well, I've been working on this for 10 years, Marie.
Well, you know, revelation can happen in a moment. You know, we don't have to think that we have to struggle with this stuff just because we've struggled with it all our life.
I've had the revelation, but it's still, that inner voice is still there saying that you shouldn't be giving. People will get big headed, or I don't know what the voice is saying. Actually,
So I use the term like circuit breakers. So I would put something in there to break that circuit, Aaron. So when we have a core message in us like that and we know what the core message is, then we can actually deal with it. So for me, when my core message being, you know, I'm not good enough, when I realised what that message, that is how I was living my life out of that message, then I started to challenge it. So every time that was made evident in my own life, I'd say to myself, actually, that's not the truth. The truth is. So every time I came up against something where I heard in my head all the negativity, all the and there's some real in there, real toxic, I would put in the word actually. That was my circuit breaker. The word actually, because once my mind went there, my whole body knew that I was going to shift right now.
Yeah,
we're not going to go down this track. And I did, and over many, it took me a long time. I had to do it constantly in my head for many, I don't know, for a long time.
Yeah,
it's been a long time since I've had to think about that. But now I do it so automatic for me. I will, if I find myself going down a track that is toxic for me, I recognize it and I go, actually, that's not the truth. That's so not the truth. And I even laugh. Laughter is a good thing. It sets off good chemicals for us. It's a wonderful thing
to
do.
And you've probably got a track in your brain for that one now. When your brain hears you say, actually, immediately there's
the
quite
truth.
A strong path now go in a different direction.
Yeah, and I do, but it took a while to build that. Mm. Dr. Caroline Leaf, a lot of her work is around that, how you can rebuild your brain and you can loop in and change patterns that are there. You can do this and it will propel your life forward, because all the things you didn't believe about yourself before that you were ripped off from believing, now you can allow those things in. You may enjoy, you know, I never thought I could do certain things. Well, actually, that's not the truth. That's so not the truth. Of course I can.
And
it's been great challenging myself to do them.
Something else I want to look at, part of one of the quotes there from Mike King is about how no matter what you do, you're not good enough. And I just want to reflect on grading kids at school. There's a near constant process that happens. And we were talking again off the air about how the grading system is more for the benefit of the bureaucracy to know how things are going on. Because most teachers, they know how their kids are doing, especially in primary school where they're with the same kids all day, every day.
Yeah.
Like they know those kids well. They don't need to do a test to know how someone's doing. But this is what I believe anyway. Some teachers might disagree, but I'm sure they'd all agree that they know quite a bit about their kids.
Yeah.
But for the kids, like I said, I did okay at school. So as an adult, I've wondered what it's like to be continually getting fails or lower grades. But also the fact that even if you are getting high grades, there's always someone who's doing better. There can only be one duck. So at the end of the year, there can only be one duck.
Yeah.
You know, and I think our culture kind of glorifies that top person. Like that's what you want to be. You want to be the top person, not one of the other thousand.
Mm.
So the other thousand, all of us feel like we're not good enough. And it took me a long time as an adult to work out that what I should be doing with my life was not trying to be the top person, but just trying to find something that was satisfying to do for me.
Mm.
You know, and once you find something that's satisfying to do, you don't need to be the top. You just need to do. Keep with the satisfaction.
Well, because you feel good about what you're doing, and it feels
it just
fits,
feels
like
good.
A glove.
It's
you know, they say to you, they've always said, if you head towards what you're passionate about, you'll do well. It's when we head towards what we're not passionate about. So if you get the child where, you know, they're born into a family where everyone's worked in the medical arena, they're doctors or nurses or whatever, the expectation is that you will be one too, and they don't want to be one. You know, they're like, I want to be police officer or something, you know, totally opposite. And they may not get the affirmation from their parents because their parents' expectation is that, you know, well, actually, this is the best part for you to be doing in life. And so then they veer that way, but they're unhappy. They're not doing what they're
passionate about. Or there's the people who are really successful who say that they feel like frauds, that any day now someone's going to discover that they're not.
Yes, you do hear that.
Yeah, all the time.
I think any one of us.
The message all along, even when you've been successful, you're an A student, but you're not the top student.
Yeah, yeah. You're not the ducks. You're not the school leader. You're not the head of the class. Wherever you might be sitting, there's only one spot, unfortunately, and we can't all have it. So if you're a person who is already quite negative about yourself, you know you're never going to get that spot. So what's the point? Let's give up now. Let's just do what we want to do.
I think in some ways it is better to at least give up on it, like trying to chase that ridiculous thing where only, you know, a tiny percentage, 1% or 0.1% of people can be the top person.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't all play for the All Blacks. You can't all be the pop star who makes $1 million.
Interesting enough, when I was in my teenage years, I actually did get picked for the New Zealand rep team in basketball, netball.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
You can't remember what sport?
No, I don't. I'm thinking of, did play indoor and outdoor, so it was the outdoor one.
It must mean a lot to you. You can't remember what sport.
Well, I was actually shocked that I got that. I remember being shocked that I got picked. I was goalkeep, and I was shocked. I thought, I remember thinking, I don't know why they picked me, you know.
And, I saw that last week with one of my players, but go on.
Yeah, and I didn't know why they picked me. It felt foreign to me. I remember going home and telling my mum, and it didn't mean anything to my family, and it didn't.
Oh, really?
Mean, yeah, no.
Oh,
because
that's not good.
Well, my parents never came to any of my games, so there was never any involvement there. I don't think they even my mum may not have even realised what that meant at that time. I don't know, but there was no involvement.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, we lived in Riverhead, and my dad would. It's terrible, really. I love my dad. Oh, I love my dad, love my dad. But he would sit there with the binoculars and watch me on the field in our sports from our house and not come down. Like, hello, Dad, that was terrible. But these are the things we didn't know. If he knew how disturbing that was for me, he probably would have come. He would have come down. But he was brought up, you know, he lost his dad in the war. He was the man of his family at the age of, I think, 13.
So the abandoned kid stuff was out at 13.
He had a sister who had polio.
Yeah.
And he had to go out and work and look after his family because his mum couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he was a lovely hearted man. So he didn't do that because he was trying to, you know, make me feel bad. He was probably tired, couldn't be bothered. Oh, watch it through these. So much easier in his thinking. But he never asked me how I felt about that. And for me, it was very disturbing that my parents never came. So I never thought I was good at anything. And I always said I wasn't good at anything. But anyway, I got picked for the team. And I remember not going. I just simply didn't go.
Really?
Yeah, because
you can see me right now. My eyes are like wide open.
Because I didn't want to disappoint my. Because I didn't think I was good enough. Like, why did you pick me?
For the people who are doing the selections, that is so frustrating. To you see the potential in someone, and you think we're going to pick that person and we're going to put them in this environment and watch them thrive, and then they don't even turn up because of that background, and it's just like it's so frustrating. It's like it's the what could have beens.
Oh yeah, and I was thinking, oh, I'll muck it up for them, embarrass myself, you know, shame, all that sort of stuff. So just simply did not have... The inner critic was front and centre in my life very, very early on, and having way too much control for far too long. In fact, I want to leave us with a kind of a metaphor around this inner
critic. Are we wrapping up now, are we, Marie?
We are we?
Oh, you're saying we're going to... Say what
you're
going to
say. Well, I have something I wanted to read.
No, I'm just thinking, aren't I in charge here?
Oh, no. Now I don't know what I wanted to say, Aaron.
Sorry, have I actually...
Oh, it's gone now. Implied.
I'm being manipulated. Emotionally
okay.
manipulated.
Well, you can wrap up. No, I'm just going to find something for us to read. What was I going to say? Oh, that's right. I was going to leave us with a bit of a metaphor. Imagine yourself in a car, and if your inner critic is taken front and centre of your life, then the inner critic has got the steering wheel, and you are now in the back seat. So you no longer are in control of how this car is going to veer through life.
Yeah.
You've allowed this inner critic to take any track he wants or she wants to take, and do whatever. It's like a kid at the wheel. It's like, yeah, I don't even know what I'm doing. What's this pedal doing? What's this do? And they're pressing things that they shouldn't be pressing. So get back in the front seat. Put your inner critic in the back seat and take control of the wheel again.
Throw them out of the car.
Well, you could. Actually, we need... Not that we don't want the inner critic, we just don't want them to take centre stage, okay? The inner critic is good for us because it holds us accountable. It holds us in some... If it's used in a healthy way, it can actually motivate us too to go forward, because our belief system is that I can. It's when our belief system is that I can't, that the inner critic has way too much ground. So do you want to say something? Before I wrap up with this little bit that I'm going to read out,
this is kind of repeating something I've said in the past too. But the when you've got that inner critic who's always telling you that you're not good enough and that the good stuff's not going to happen in your life, it makes you blind to the opportunities and the possibilities and the good things that are happening or could happen.
Yeah,
and your story of not playing the rep netball completely. Cut your feet out from under you.
Oh, yeah. No, there was no sports for me after that because, well, that's all I did. And honestly, my...
Did your coach say to you, why did you not turn up? Or there must have been adults who said...
No.
Or do they write you off and say, well, that kid's not worth wasting time on?
Because I wasn't probably in a good space anyway. I was starting to go off the rails then. It would have taken a lot to pull me back.
There's a bit more recognition that sometimes those kids can be turned around, and like if the sport's hungry for a good player, they'll put the effort in to try to turn that child around.
And I think that if that had happened, but if somebody had followed me like that, I probably would have even shied away more, because I'd been like, oh no, you know, there was just no way affirmation or that sense of positivity was able to reach into me and have an impact.
It sounds like you were, by that point, you were on your journey
There was a wall
you
up
had to
already.
Wait, you had to wait for life experience to show you different things.
Definitely, and work through it myself.
Yeah,
you know,
which is because I know your story, that's what you did.
Yeah. So I'm going to end up with this. It's called Thinking Minds. And this is just, you know, don't ever think, because I didn't start well, that I'm not going to end well. Or just because you're in your 20s and you think you should have it all together now.
Yeah.
That, you know, and don't... I'm just going to read this and you take it how you want to. Someone graduated at the age of 22 but waited 5 years before securing a good job. Someone became a CEO at 25 and died at 50, while another became a CEO at 50 and lived to 90 years. Someone is still single, while someone from his school group has become grandfather. Obama retired at 55 and Trump started at 70. Everyone in this world works based on their time zone. People around you might seem ahead of you and some might seem to be behind you, but everyone is running their own race in their own time. Do not envy them. They are in their time zone and you are in yours. So relax. You're not late. You're not early. You're very much on time.
So if you're not getting that because we're talking about that recognition of being the top person and things like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to, you also don't have to be the top person by a certain point.
You're on a journey. It's saying. Okay. It can at some point in your life, you're going to be number one. It's going to be your moment, and the spotlight's going to shine in some perspective.
We need to define number one. It might just be you're just satisfied with a job that you've finally got a job that's satisfying.
It might be that you're able to receive the affirmations that your family give you for doing such a good job as being a parent.
Mm. All right. Thank you, Marie, for coming in. We've been talking to Marie, local counsellor therapist, and we've stopped in time for a track, so I'm going to play, somewhat ironically, a track called Summer. It's Lewis McLachlan.
Well, it is days. Well, it is days.